Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good Friday morning, everybody. You might say this was a good week for people who believe in economic stimulus. Not the kind of Obama stimulus package we saw in 2009, perhaps, with massive federal spending for the states and for jobs programs. That kind of stimulus, too, is politically impossible right now. But in two other significant ways. Around midnight last night, Congress passed the $800 billion tax cut and unemployment insurance compromise. And earlier in the week, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke reaffirmed his controversial policy of quantitative easing, or having the Fed buy $600 billion of U.S. government bonds. Here is Bernanke on 60 Minutes last week.
One myth that's out there is that what we're doing is printing money. We're not printing money. The amount of currency in circulation is not changing. The money supply is not changing in any significant way. What we're doing is lowering interest rates by buying Treasury securities. And by lowering interest rates, we hope to stimulate the economy to grow faster. So the trick is to find the appropriate moment when to begin to unwind this policy.
Ben Bernanke on 60 Minutes on December 5th. So depending on how you do the math, that's $600 billion plus $800 billion, $1.4 trillion new dollars of economic stimulus, controversial as both measures are regarding the stimulus they'll actually provide. Let's talk about it with John Hilsenrath, Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent. Hi, John. Thanks
hey there,
for coming on
you?
WNYC today. Good.
Thanks for having me.
There's a couple of things
from both the Bernanke clip and what you were just talking about.
Go ahead.
I think requires more discussion. These are all such complicated issues. You know, one thing in the Bernanke clip, he
says that's why you're here.
They're not printing money. Well, actually, they are. The Fed isn't literally printing more dollars, more dollar bills that are floating around in the economy, but it is creating electronically by crediting banks with cash in returns for the bonds it's buying. So the Fed really is printing money. That was a bit of misspeaking by the Fed chairman. The other thing I'd say on the $1.4 trillion that you were just talking about, we should distinguish between fiscal policy and monetary policy. So, when the government cuts taxes, that's fiscal policy that shows up, you know, directly in the pocketbooks of households. The Fed printing money isn't the same thing. One of the things that the Fed is doing is using the money it prints to buy bonds that the government is issuing to cut the taxes. So there's a little bit of double counting there.
So I understand that there's fiscal policy and there's monetary policy. But in Bernanke's own words in that same clip, by lowering interest rates, we're hoping to stimulate the economy to grow faster, he said.
Absolutely, yeah.
So he sees it that way.
They're two. I think the thing to say is they're two different forms of stimulus. You know, the fiscal stimulus through tax cuts goes, you know, directly into household bank accounts. The monetary stimulus doesn't. The important thing is when the Fed prints money, that doesn't contribute to the budget deficit. It's not leading to a bigger budget deficit. It is pumping money into the economy, but it isn't doing it by borrowing, which is what the federal government is doing.
Right. And one version I heard of why Bernanke was so set on trying this quantitative easing was that the other kind of stimulus was politically stuck in Congress. And he thought, hey, we have to do something. I still am afraid of a deflationary spiral long term. And so I have to use the powers that I have to try to stimulate the economy. Is that your understanding?
Right. Well, that was a factor. I mean, what we saw in the summer was the economy slowed down. The inflation numbers, despite the fact that commodity prices have been rising, were falling. And the Fed got worried that the economy was slowing too much, that there was no help coming on the fiscal front, that we could fall into a Japan-like deflationary spiral, and they decided to do something. I think a lot of people were blindsided by the agreement that Obama worked out with congressional Republicans to not only extend the Bush tax cuts, but also to add on with payroll tax cuts and some business tax cuts. So we ended up getting, I think, more stimulus than most people would have bet for in the summer. You know, there's a question of whether that's a good or a bad thing. You know, unemployment is so high, near 10%. Inflation, despite the fact that commodity prices are rising, by many measures, is still very low. So, you know, a little extra stimulus might not be such a bad thing for an economy that needs so much help.
But? Is there a but?
There's always a but. Of course, there's always a but. You know, but the facts are that Bernanke said he wanted interest rates to go lower. They're actually going higher. There are worries about the deficit. There are, you know, costs to both what the Fed is doing and what the White House is doing on the tax cut side. It's only adding to a budget deficit that has to be addressed at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And on the Fed side, you know, they're going to have to take the stimulus away at one point, which could slow the economy down. And there's a risk that it could cause some inflation, which, you know, they're going to have to watch very carefully.
So, you know, listeners, we'll take some phone calls for John Hilsenrath, Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent, on the stimulus side of the tax cut compromise and the quantitative easing. Anything you want to say or ask about this, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let's see. I read one defense of the quantitative easing program that says, well, let me back up a little. One of the big headlines, as you mentioned, has been that it's supposed to work by lowering long-term interest rates,
right,
thereby making it cheaper for businesses to borrow money, thereby creating new jobs. But long-term interest rates seem to actually be going up in reaction instead. Is that a mystery,
right,
to you?
Well, it's I wouldn't call it a mystery, but it's a hard situation to explain, but let me try. So there's a couple of things, there's a couple of issues at play here. One is that, in fact, I think one could argue that it did reduce interest rates, but it actually did it before the program was even implemented. So, you know, we've been reporting and the Fed's been talking about the possibility of a quantitative easing program really since early August. And what you saw happen in August and September and into October was that long-term interest rates really did fall. Mortgage rates came down. We did see some pickup in mortgage refinancing, some households, but not many were helped by this. There was actually a boom of issuance of junk bonds by corporations who were able to improve their balance sheets in this junk bond boom. So a lot of this happened in anticipation of the Fed's announcement. But then what happened is after the announcement happened, interest rates turned around and started rising. There's a question of why that's the case. One argument is that interest rates have started rising because the economic outlook has improved, and this is normal behavior that when the economy starts growing faster, that interest rates respond by going up. Another explanation is the fiscal stimulus that came out in early December, the grand bargain between the White House and congressional Republicans, that seemed to improve the growth outlook, but it also added to deficit worries, which have, and it is the case that long-term rates have increased by about a half percentage point since that announcement 2 Mondays ago. So there are a lot of different factors at play. I think it's fair to say that the Fed's program did provide some stimulus, but you could have a lot of debate and disagreement about whether it was fleeting and, mm-hmm, you know, just how much it helped.
And before we go to some calls, one defense that I read of the program says the rising long-term rates are actually a sign of quantitative easing success because it means there is confidence in the bond markets about growth in the future, meaning lenders can make borrowing more expensive and still expect business, still expect borrowers to invest, to buy those bonds at those higher rates. Do you buy
right.
that?
Well, you know, I mean, it certainly is an indication that that the bond market is pricing in the likelihood of better growth in 2011 than it had expected. I mean, I think you can also say that the bond market is pricing out the likelihood of a Japan-like deflation. You know, if we were getting little growth and there was a risk of deflation, long-term interest rates would be falling. They wouldn't be. They wouldn't be rising. But there's a lot of conflicting signals in this, and I think that, you know, the most prudent way to look at this is that it probably did provide some help, but it clearly can't be called a great success because the bond market also prices risks of inflation, and you know, inflation expectations have picked up a little bit.
John Hilsenrath, Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent, my guest on WNYC, as we talk about whether this week represents the revenge of the stimulus crowd with $800 billion worth of what some consider new economic stimulus in the tax cut compromise and unemployment insurance compromise that did pass the House last night around midnight, and the $600 billion of the Fed buying U.S. Treasury bonds, which is in the monetary policy realm, but was reaffirmed by the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke this week. And add the two together, you get $1.4 trillion of one form of stimulus or another. Frank in Chester, you're on WNYC. Hello, Frank.
Hi, Brian. Brian, I'm an automobile dealer. I employ 160 people. And what happened last night, or what's going to be signed into law today by the president, is going to have a great effect. I don't think anyone's paying attention to the amount of energy that the demand has been sitting quietly waiting for this change. I've made a commitment to build a new $5 million building for one of my I'm an automobile dealer, one of my dealerships. With this, with the change in the tax law, I'm going to be able to take and be sure to give my employees a raise. And I think the quantitative easing is unnecessary. And quite frankly, it frightens me as a businessman that it's going to take and really accelerate inflation, which is the last thing we need down the road.
How about the inflation angle, John? And Frank, stay there for a second because I want to ask you something. But John, what about the inflation fear here?
So, a couple of responses to the caller. One argument right now is that the Fed, it turns out, didn't need to do this because we were getting fiscal stimulus and because the economy was picking up anyway. You're going to be hearing more of that. You know, as far as inflation goes, I think there are two very powerful cross currents that are pulling inflation in different directions. On the one hand, you have strong demand globally in China and India and in emerging markets, where growth really has picked up, and that's putting upward pressure on commodity prices, which is frightening to a lot of people because it feeds through to things like gasoline and your grocery bills, and you know, that really kind of registers with people when they think about inflation. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, the economy is burdened by a lot of slack. Unemployment at 10%, millions of homes sitting unoccupied, factories not working at full capacity. All of that pulls inflation in the other direction. And, you know, I think what we're likely to see, at least this year, is these two powerful forces fighting to a standstill. And not creating a lot of underlying inflation. You know, we look at gasoline bills going up. You know, actually, gasoline and oil prices are close to half where they were a couple of years ago. And there's other things that people don't think about so much where prices are barely rising. You know, the cost of a haircut didn't increase last year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. You know, typically it rises about 3% a year.
It's still $12 in my neighborhood. Frank, as a car dealer, when you have this optimistic projection now about car sales because of the compromise, is it because of the controversial part, maintaining the lower tax rates on the top 2%, or is it because of other things in the bill?
The increase in car sales has very little to do with the bill, Brian. That's really a pent-up demand that's been sitting there. What's happening now is that banks are starting to loosen up their credit lines enough where you can get the person who couldn't be financed before financed. So that's what's going to increase. I think we're going to see a 13.5, possibly even a 14 million SARs in 2011. I think it's going to be much stronger than most people realize. But what is not being paid attention to is the fact that with this quantitative easing, the banks are starting to look at the ability to take and charge a higher interest rate. That's going to have an effect on inflation and how things are priced with the manufacturers. Of course, all the commodities are affecting the manufacturers also. But you know, I really believe that no one's paying any attention to what's going to happen in 2011. I think it's going to be a absolute gangbusters of a year for business.
All right. I hear your concern, and I hear your optimism. By the way, Frank, what's your best-selling model right now?
Well, I'm a Honda dealer and a Mercedes dealer, and, of course, I sell 4,000 new Hondas a year and only about 800 Mercedes, so I have to say the Honda is.
Which one, though?
Which model of the Honda?
Uh-huh.
The Accord is still the Accord and the Civic almost run side by side because that's just the bread and butter cars for
right.
the average commuter.
Absolutely. Frank, call us again. I really appreciate you chiming in.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, John, you wanted to follow up on something there?
Couple things. One is he talks about the banks loosening lending standards. You know, one of the things that the Fed is trying to do is to push interest rates on safe instruments like Treasuries so low that the banks have no alternative but to do riskier kind of lending, because, you know, banks have loaded up on Treasury securities in the last couple of years, you know, as they've tried to rebuild their own balance sheets. And one of the points of the quantitative easing program is to get investors and banks into riskier kinds of lending and investing, like doing car loans. So to a certain extent, he's speaking to perhaps some success in the Fed program. The other thing I wanted to mention, which doesn't come up much in these debates about stimulus, is how deficit reduction fits in. You know, I think that the idea that doesn't get enough credit here in Washington is that if they came up with a long-term deficit reduction plan, something that doesn't happen today but is credible and is likely to work through the economy over the next 10, 20 years, it would actually provide stimulus right now today, because the bond market would react, long-term interest rates would come down, and you would get more borrowing in the present if people saw a credible path out of the really severe fiscal mess that we've got, that we're heading into. I'm surprised that policymakers in Washington don't frame deficit reduction as a form of stimulus, because, in fact, it would be.
Interesting. Brittany in Hoboken has a very practical, down-to-earth question about all this. Hi, Brittany. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. You guys were talking about mortgage rates before, and I'm thinking of refinancing, and then the rates just went up, so I was wondering if you thought the stimulus would bring mortgage rates down again, or if I should get in while I can.
Or the Fed's policy of quantitative easing. Can you look into your crystal ball, John?
I do not bother looking into crystal balls, because if anything, the last 6 months have demonstrated that it's very hard to predict which way long-term interest rates are going to go. And, you know, my advice on things like refinancing is always that, you know, if it makes sense for you to do now, if you could do it and improve your financial position, then go ahead and do it now. If you wait and, you know, thinking that you have a better idea where interest rates are going, you know, than some million-dollar bond dealer on Wall Street, then, you know, good luck. But, you know, I think you have to look at your personal financial situation today and say to yourself, is this going to work? You know, can I do this? Can I lower my monthly costs enough to cover whatever expenses I have to bear to do the refinancing? And if it works, then go ahead and do it. I mean, rates are really low. They might go lower, but in this kind of uncertain time, they could easily go in the other direction.
Brittany, thank you. One more thing before you go, and my guest has been John Hilsenrath, Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent, as we talk about all the possible stimulus in the new tax cut unemployment insurance compromise and in the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing policy, buying $600 billion of federal bonds. The Fed's independence, the fact that they can do this on their own, outside of the normal politics of Washington and of America, obviously rankles some people. Here we just had, you know, an election which many people could interpret as having ordered the government to go in a different direction than that. And here now we have Ron Paul, the famous congressman and Fed skeptic, taking over an important House Finance Subcommittee that will oversee the Fed. And here is Ron Paul talking to NPR about the first thing he's going to do when he takes that chairmanship in January.
The main thing I will do to start off with will be to continue the effort to at least get transparency of the Fed, to audit the Fed, to know what they've been doing.
So do you want to comment on the incoming Ron Paul, Ben Bernanke dynamic? He would just soon do away with the whole Federal Reserve Board, Ron Paul. And whether you think this independence that the Fed has from politics as usual is a good thing or a bad thing?
Right. So let me say a couple things. One is, I think what Ron Paul and Bernie Sanders and a lot of other people up on Capitol Hill have been doing is a good thing, because the Fed does need to be more transparent about its activities. It is ultimately accountable to the public. Bernie Sanders, the Vermont independent, he's actually a socialist, push, which is ironic because Ron Paul is on the other end of the political spectrum.
Right. The most libertarian and the most socialist member of Congress have the same view of the lack of transparency and the kind of general evilness of the Fed.
Right. Well, I think calling it evil is taking things a little bit too far. But the push for transparency, I think, has been for the better. You know, I'll give you one example. The Fed was required by the financial reform law to disclose all of its lending through some of these special exotic programs during the financial crisis. The Fed was reluctant to do this because it was afraid that it would be hampered in its ability to deal with the next crisis. But I think shining a light on that lending has been a good thing for the public and probably for the Fed, because it demonstrated the lengths that it went to keep the financial system from falling into complete collapse. So transparency is good, and I think the Fed is kind of grudgingly moving in that direction. As far as the Fed's independence go, it's a very strange phenomenon what we're seeing right now. The Fed had to fight hard for independence over the years because it wanted to be in a position to raise interest rates and tighten financial conditions when it saw inflation coming. It always felt that it needed independence so that it could deal with inflation. It felt it needed independence so that it, the saying was, so that it could take the punch bowl away from the party at the right time. The idea was that Congress would interfere with the Fed to do more to make the financial conditions easier and not tighter.
And today it's the opposite.
The irony here is that today Congress is saying do less.
Right.
And the Fed is saying it wants to do more. It's a very unusual situation.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So we will see what happens, and hopefully our car dealer caller from Chester is right and 2011 is going to be gangbusters. Put that in the Wall Street Journal.
Hopefully he's half right, because he also said there's going to be inflation.
John Hilson Rath, Wall Street Journal chief economics correspondent. And John, here's one more thing for you to check out. You may want to check out the two videos that we have on the front page now of our politics website. It's afreecountry.org. You've done a great job of explaining quantitative easing here. But listeners, we have one video that's a critique of quantitative easing as performed by two animated dogs.
Yeah, the video, the Ben Bernanke and the Goldman Sachs.
Exactly. That video has already gotten 4 million hits on YouTube. And the other is a response to that viral video in support of Fed policy. So you can see both of them and join the conversation about QE2 at itsafreecountry.org, everybody. John, what?
The supporting one, I think, got maybe like 4,000 hits. It is not nearly as popular as the critique, which tells you something about the times we're living in.
The correction never goes on page one. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot,
John. That was good. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a follow-up Friday segment on two things that came up briefly during the week. One was President Obama's view of what you do in hostage situations. The other is the question, did Congress ever require all Americans to buy ammunition? Stay with us.